This is Tea Earl Grey Heart, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. Kir Shalara. Hello and welcome to Tea Earl Grey Heart, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. My name is Dave, and I am joined this week, as every week, by my good friend over in the Confederato Helvetica, Yannick. Was that about right?
Yeah.
Close enough.
Yes.
How are you doing, Yannick?
I'm very well, thank you. Very excited to record another episode.
Yeah, and of course we're closing off yet another story arc this week.
Yes.
Only to start a new one next week. There's a new three-part arc starting next week. Who was it who asked? I think it might have been Ro last week, who said we seem to be doing a lot of arcs this season.
Was it Ro or was it Jason?
It might have been Jason. Oh, I can't remember.
Yeah. With so many great guests.
Well, exactly. And we should, of course, say thank you very much indeed to Ro for joining us last week.
Absolutely.
Having edited last week's show, I had to take out such a lot of absolutely classic content because it just wasn't appropriate for the show. But I think I certainly had a really good time talking to Ro. It's been such a long time since I spoke to him. And I'm really looking forward to inviting him back in, I think it's 10 weeks.
Yes, something.
Yes, like inviting that, him back in 10 weeks to revisit another story arc that's going to be starting in the not too distant future.
Yes.
So have you been up to anything Star Trekky Recky related this week?
Yes, actually I have been playing with my 3D printer, and I have been 3D printing a giant com badge. You may recall that I have printed small com badges for you and for some other people, and for the benefit of the Dave. Dave is holding one of
for the benefit of the video that nobody will see. Yes.
So I thought, you know, those com badges, they're really great, and so I printed it. Kind of like the Discovery ones. So there's the left part is all black, and the right part will be white. And I do love LEDs. I mean, the world need more LEDs. So I'm going to try and put a LED strip in there, so that the color just shows through the white part.
Just through the middle bit there,
and the middle bit there, entirety. Yes. The star from the Discovery badge, yes. So that's still a work in progress. It's in the early stages. I have like 372 projects to finish before this one.
But indeed. Let's try again. How big is the larger size com badge?
Let's see. I have it here, and I have my ruler, and it's 24 centimeters high.
Wow. Okay. That's so you couldn't really wear that on your chest. Could
no,
you?
No. It's destined to be on a wall or on display somewhere.
Excellent. Look forward to seeing that. You'll have to put a photograph in the show notes of whichever show it is that we're up to by the time you've actually managed to finish that particular project.
Yes, I won't pass on an occasion to show up.
Quite right too.
So, what have you been up to, Dave?
To be fair, not a lot. Really, the only thing I've been up to Star Trekky this week is looking at the teaser trailer you sent me earlier on today. Yeah. Which looks really interesting. We'll be talking more about that a bit later on. But no, unfortunately, I haven't done much Star Trekky. In fact, I was supposed to be binge watching the original series, which I started doing last week, and I haven't managed to watch any of that. It's been a very busy week because both of us, in fact, we're preparing to go to Manchester.
Yay!
I know you've got a lot more travelling to do than I have. And hopefully this episode will be out before that happens. But
yes, hopefully. I make no promises.
Yeah, we're both going... No, exactly. It is what it is. If we manage to get the show out before the weekend, then brilliant. Otherwise, well, whatever.
That's life.
Hopefully, if some of our listeners are going to be going to Oddcamp this weekend, we'll meet up with them there.
Yeah.
So on this week's show, we have our review of Season 4, Episode 9 of Enterprise, entitled Kirshara, and we have our usual roundup of the news from the last couple of weeks.
Yes.
So, with that said, let's get on with our review of Season 4, Episode 9, Kirshara. So, in the teaser for this episode, we find ourselves in the chambers of the Vulcan High Command. And Administrator Velaz is showing the assembled Vulcans the Andorian ship movements around Pan Mocha. Kovac points out that the Vulcans themselves gave the Andorians that planet when they signed a treaty. He's wondering why the Andorians would mount a defensive position around it. Velaz tells him that the Andorians believe that the Vulcans are intending to retake it because probes have been generating false warp signatures. Kovac questions why the Council was not informed of this, but Velaz says that it is possible that the Andorian agents have penetrated the High Command and that it was necessary to limit that information. Velaz then shows Kovac the actual location of the Vulcan forces preparing an invasion of Andoria. He's preparing this as he believes that the Andorians are in possession of Zindi technology, namely a prototype of the Zindi weapon taken from the Kalindra system. He's convinced that the Andorians will make use of this weapon against his species someday.
Yeah.
I don't believe him.
No.
I don't believe him. He's starting to become more and more seedy as the as the episodes progress. Now, I noticed that Kovac, at the point where Kovac said data can be falsified, Velaz looked incredibly guilty.
Yeah, and when he said that the High Council may have been penetrated by Andorian agents, it sounded like, you know, it was making things up just to justify what he was doing.
Well, exactly. Well, we shall see whether that is the case, or not, shall we not? We indeed. So, the episode starts properly. We're on Vulcan, still. Archer, T'Pau, and T'Pol are continuing on towards the Vulcan High Command. Archer is carrying the recently discovered Kirshara, the cardboard pyramid that you mentioned last week. Archer is intent on getting the artifact back to the High Command, but it is 2 days away. T'Pau underlines the importance on getting the sacred object to the High Command, as it is the only surviving record of Surak's teachings, and it would have an enormous impact on not only the High Command, but Vulcan society itself.
Yeah, I noticed that when T'Pau says that, that T'Pau is really... she's really not happy with that. She's looking like something's wrong. Like she doesn't want that to happen. Maybe she fears that her world is going to change or something. But she was really not enjoying this revelation.
Seems like a classic case of denial, because she's being absolutely bombarded with information that she still believes in her heart that isn't true.
Mm-hmm.
So she's been being presented with all this information. She doesn't know how to process it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I get that. Totally. On Enterprise, in Archer's ready room, Lieutenant Reed is informing Tucker on the status of the ship's torpedo launchers. Malcolm asks for permission to speak freely. And when he's granted this, he asks Tucker why they are headed for Andoria when Admiral Gardner had ordered the Enterprise to go back to Earth. Tucker informs him that they are going back, but they are just taking a small detour first. When Malcolm asks him what Gardner will do when he finds out what Tucker is doing, The commander sarcastically promises Reed a seat at his court-martial. Malcolm believes the Vulcans have legitimate reasons for launching the strike, and if they alert the Andorians, they will be betraying their closest ally. Tucker tells Malcolm he is just trying to prevent a war, and when Malcolm says to Tucker that they should not get involved, Saval enters, and Malcolm is dismissed by Tucker. Quite formally, I noticed. It was very much a dismissed lieutenant.
Yes, and even the whole conversation was... I mean, it was like from one member of the crew to a superior. And when a Trip is not in command, they are more... they seem to be friends together, Malcolm and Trip. And here, it was really like, superior to his crewman relationship. So
it's not the first time that's happened, though.
Yeah,
they've almost come to blows before, and I think it was to do with, I might have mentioned this in a previous show actually, around about the time when I think they were in the Expanse and Corporal, I can't remember his name now, the head of the Makos, the commander of the Makos, Corporal Random, was that? Was going to be teaching the Enterprise crew about close combat fighting. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty certain it was at that point that Tucker and Reed they kind of clashed on that as well.
Yeah, but I mean, it's okay. I mean, they don't have to agree on everything, but there's just the tone of the conversation between those two. Here, as you said, it sounded very formal. And when Trip is not in command, it seems to me that they are more it's more friendly when they discuss together. But maybe because Trip is now in command, that he gains the respect that the captains, even if he's not the full-time captain, I mean, he's assuming the position, so he gets the respect that goes with that. I'm not aware of how it works in the military anyway.
No, I think you're right, and I think that the way that Malcolm started the conversation, the use of the phrase
permission to speak freely,
that's not the kind of thing you would say to a friend.
Yeah.
That is something you would say to a commanding officer.
Yeah.
Which would make Tucker third in command of the Enterprise.
Yes. So Archer, Tipple, Tucker, and then Reed.
Yes, because Tucker, later on, he gives the con
to Reed.
To Reed. Saval asks Tucker why he had asked for him, and he says he knows that the Andorian Imperial Guard will likely not believe them about the imminent Vulcan invasion, but there may be one Andorian who will trust them, Shran. Tucker has no idea where the Andorian commander is, but Saval reveals that he may be able to help.
Yeah. I thought that maybe there was something more than just the Vulcan having been able to decrypt their transmission. I thought maybe Saval and Shran had some secret plan, but no, it just was not that.
No. Saval notices that Reed seemed unsettled. Tucker said that some of the crew is wondering if he is doing the right thing, and he's asking himself the same question. And then Saval says something which I didn't expect him to say. He said that he is sure that Archer would have taken the same course of action.
Yeah, I think he's right.
Yeah, I am too, but maybe it's because of the circumstances around this three-story arc, how the relationship between Archer and Saval has changed as a result of the bombing at the embassy and the death of Admiral Forrest. But I wouldn't necessarily have expected Saval to have come out in support of Archer Trip.
You mean
at the same time.
Express that publicly?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Agreed.
So back on Vulcan, Archer, T'Pol and T'Pau are trudging through the caves with the Kirshara. T'Pol is still cynical regarding the importance of the Kirshara. Archer states that Vlaz has been preparing for an attack against the Andorians since the dispute with them was settled 2 years ago. T'Pol is curious as to how Archer knows this, and he suggests that some of Siren's memories might have been transferred to him in the Meld. T'Pol is concerned that Archer isn't making the decisions here, but he recognises that if it were the other way around, he would be just as sceptical. T'Pau stops Archer from moving forward just the moment before he encounters some galasite deposits, which attract an electrical charge towards anything metal, which includes the knife that Archer was carrying.
Yeah, several things in this scene. First, I thought that they were running in circle in some sort of cave. I mean, it was I watched it two or three times just to see if I could spot the same background. I could not spot that, but it really felt like, you know, they were running around in circles in this scene. And
well, we'd already established that they'd spent most of the special effects budget, so it wouldn't surprise me if they'd gone around the same place three or four times.
Yeah, and also, where does that knife come from? And really, is that the only piece of metal they have on them? I mean, surely they have some metal on their clothes or something.
Well, wasn't he carrying a backpack? So yes. He must have had some like metal buckles on that or something.
Yeah, T'Pol is carrying a Starfleet backpack. Well, Starfleet, I don't know if it's Starfleet, but it's really modern.
Yeah, little plot hole there.
Yeah.
In the High Command chambers, Kuvak tells Vlas that their patrol has returned with 8 Serenites from the destroyed sanctuary. The Serenites have revealed their leader, Siren, is dead. But there were 3 more survivors from the bombardment, 2 other Vulcans, and a human, Archer. Kuvak reveals that the Serenites have disclosed that Archer is carrying the Kirshara, but Vlas dismisses this, saying that the Kirshara never existed. He dismisses Kuvak and orders a sub-lieutenant to inform Talok to find and eradicate the remaining Serenites.
Yeah. Did you notice that this sub-lieutenant didn't have a single line? I mean, he didn't get to say anything. He just nodded and moved. So the actor was like sitting there.
I'm sure he said something.
No.
Something like, okay.
No.
Or.
No.
Or, okay. Oh, okay. I thought he did.
But I watched it twice. No.
I'll happily defer to you on that one.
Yeah. It was just sitting there like, I don't know what to do. And then he nodded and left.
Well, that saved him a few $1,000s, didn't it?
Yeah.
The Enterprise arrives in Andorian territory. It stops near a nebula. Saval and Tucker telecommunicate with Shran, who has apparently concealed his own presence inside the nebula. Later, Saval, Tucker and Shran meet aboard the Enterprise. Saval and Tucker inform Shran that a Vulcan fleet is preparing to attack Andorian space near Regulus. However, Shran is not totally convinced. He's concerned of the impact of this attack for both the Andorian and Vulcan worlds. He also cannot understand why Saval is willing to betray his own people, but it's to protect them, not to betray them.
And to protect the not just the Vulcan, but also the Andorians and Earth, and well, basically the whole.
We know that. But in that particular dialogue, he was questioning why Saval was betraying his people, not protecting the Andorians. In the Vulcan desert, T'Pol and T'Pau observe a Vulcan patrol craft flying in the red sky. It's the 4th one they have seen just that day. When T'Pol angrily informs T'Pau of the urgent need to get Archer, who is nearby sleeping, to a doctor, she quickly apologises, saying that the death of her mother, T'Lez, has affected her deeply. T'Pau sympathises with her, telling T'Pol that she valued her mother's counsel. She reveals to T'Pol that they also melded. I presume that was at the point where T'Lez was dying. And the Serenite way, should I say, of transferring the Katra. I don't know whether that's the case
but
or not.
When Talis was dying, she was with T'Pol.
So I wonder why they would have melded, unless it was just a recreational meld. When T'Pau offers to share the thoughts she experienced with T'Pol's mother, T'Pol informs her that she has Panar syndrome, a result of when a Vulcan man improperly mind-melded with her, and that this syndrome is incurable. T'Pau tells her that this is yet another lie perpetrated by the High Command. T'Pau tells T'Pol that Panar syndrome was known about in Surak's time and is caused by an improperly performed mind meld. It can, apparently, be cured by an accomplished melder. T'Pau melds with T'Pol and presumably cures her Panar syndrome. And yet, we don't know that's actually true.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. The scene...
It is an assumption at this point. Mm-hmm. But I should probably point out, as normal, we are... using the review from Memory Alpha as the basis. There are actually quite a few gaps in the review, it's worth pointing out, which we've tried to fill in. But the line, presumably cures her Panar syndrome, has actually come from the Memory Alpha review. But yeah, we have no evidence to prove that is actually the case. In the nebula, Shran orders the abduction of Saval. He is beamed into a restraint under guard. I have a question.
Yeah?
Yeah. How was he beamed in lying down?
Huh.
The only way he would have been beamed in lying down is if he was lying down in the first place.
That's what I was going to say.
Otherwise, he would have ended up standing on the bench thing that he was going to be restrained into, or literally inside it, where his legs are like under the bed and his body was on top of the bed, which probably would have hurt a bit.
Unless the Andorian have a way to... change the orientation of people that they beam. Who knows?
Possibly. Unless he's flying through the sky, they kind of tilt it backwards.
Yeah, unless the Enterprise was like, you know, not leveled with the Andorian ship, and then maybe it's, I don't know.
Well, we've discussed this before that there's no up in space.
Absolutely, yeah.
So they could have been slightly on a skew, and it just happens that how he came in. But yeah. And
every vessel is leveled with every other. So
this is the only instance I am aware of from all of the series and seasons of Star Trek and the films I've seen where a person arrives apparently not in the posture they were when they were sent.
Yes, that's true.
But again, we don't know that he wasn't laying down on a bench similar to the one that he was transported onto.
Absolutely, yeah. I don't know if it's just me, but I thought that Shran was just a little bit hesitant just before transporting Saval.
Yes. And I found, certainly in this next section, that... Excuse me a moment. Right. I've just been passed a note from Caroline. Thank you, Caroline. To our listeners, she will be appearing on the first episode review of Picard in January. And I've just been passed a note in response to my question of how Saval was transported in laying down. And her response was, spacey, wacy, timey, wimey. Oops. Oops, wrong show.
Yeah, but... You know, I accept that.
What, spacey, wacy, timey, wimey? Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Right. So, we're now into Act 2. Shran, suspicious of the information that Saval has given him about the impending invasion, demands that Saval reveal the truth. Saval reminds him that he was truthful through their previous negotiations, but Shran still proceeds to torture him. He's using a device that affects the Vulcan nervous system, causing Saval to soon lose control of his emotional barrier. Two things there. The first one was that hesitation.
Yeah.
He hesitated again, because when they were talking about... I think the exact words that Saval used, did I lie to you before, or did I let you down before?
Yeah, I remember.
And Shran kind of stopped and looked down and went... No.
Mm-hmm.
So there's hesitation there. But also, did you notice Shran's makeup was starting to crack in that scene.
I didn't notice just that
around here. around the size of his mouth where he was like talking and shouting. There seemed to be like little cracks appearing on the left hand side of his mouth.
I didn't notice that specifically in this scene, but I always look for that.
Yeah,
because you know he's all blue. His teeth are blue too, and I always look wherever he touches something. If there's some residue somewhere, but they do a good job with that. I don't know what they use for the makeup, but it seems to be
not a clue. I mean, it was like when we saw the green skinned. Yes. I can't remember what their race is called. In whichever episode it was. They did do a good job of it. Soon, the Enterprise sees that Saval is missing and that he's on Shran's ship. Tucker hails the ship but gets no response. The Andorian ships head for the nebula and Enterprise follows, firing on Shran's ship, but they lose them in the nebula.
They fire on the Andorian ship, but that doesn't seem to do anything at all.
No, I did notice that. I'm going to do my thing again. Mm-hmm. When Tucker calls for Saval... internally, so when they realised he was missing, he pressed the button on his console and said, "Tucker to Saval, Ambassador, respond." He never switched off the comm device, so everything he said from that point onwards would have been transmitted around the entire ship.
Yeah, but there's an auto switch off, maybe.
Yeah, let's go with that. Or Hoshi realized that he'd finished and cancelled the, I don't know.
Yeah, because she's a great communications official. So,
well, that's kind of a job, isn't it? That's what she's there to do.
Yeah, she's not paid for it, but yeah, that's what she's there.
Well, she probably is.
I don't think
No, probably not. No. Oh no, because they don't. There's no money in that society, is there?
No,
it's all based on
is there
supply and demand?
Is it close enough to the original series for that to already be there, or for the possibility that it's not there?
It was mentioned in the original series films. It was certainly mentioned in. It was certainly mentioned in The Next Generation.
Yeah, many times.
I can't remember which episode specifically. But, I mean, didn't we determine we were about 130 years or something before NCC 1701? So, that's a good question. That's a good question. I don't know. I don't know whether currency is...
Is still a thing.
Is still a thing or not. It's a good point, actually. We'll try and maybe... catch up with that after the review.
Mm-hmm.
Back on Vulcan, Archer, T'Pau and T'Pol continue on. And concerned for Archer's health, T'Pol suggests that they stop. Archer does so under the guise that T'Pol really wanted to take a breather herself. While T'Pau scouts the area, Archer tries to talk to T'Pol to get her to take another look at the Cyrenite philosophy. He notes her previous disagreements with the High Command and that it was important to her mother, but T'Pol says there are a lot of groups who make similar claims with no evidence that this group is any different. She exclaims that the Cyrenites' beliefs have little to do with science. And then as T'Pau comes back, T'Pol breaks off the conversation. I notice that these emotional outbursts from T'Pol are becoming much more and more frequent. Now, I totally get that she's just lost her mother, and that is bound to have an effect on her. But I did do a little bit of research into her personal relationships, and I read that because of the things that they'd experienced in the previous four and a half years, that her emotional bond with Archer was really, really quite strong at that point. And I do believe, if I'm not mistaken, there was just a kindling of a possible romance between Archer and T'Pol in the earlier seasons, and I'm wondering whether her emotional outburst, because you may have noticed, certainly of recent weeks, that a lot of the heated conversations that T'Pol is having, she's having with Archer.
Yes, I noticed that. Yes.
And it could well be that that is not an accident. The fact that,
maybe.
She does have an emotional bond to him that she probably knows she shouldn't have. So that's probably going to get her back up in the first place, because she's experiencing these emotional feelings towards somebody when she knows she shouldn't, but she's got no control over that. But also the fact that she thinks he's suffering at the moment. That's what I'm picking up. And there's going to be a certain element of helplessness that she can't do anything to assist him because of the circumstances under which he's going through at the moment. So as time has gone on, her emotional outbursts are getting more and more and more. I mean, she was shouting in this particular scene.
Yes. Yeah.
And I can't actually recall, aside from the time when she was going through her suppression issues, I don't recall her ever shouting.
No, I don't. I think you're right, yes.
So we're back on the Andorian ship now. And Saval, even under a severe emotional stress and torture, insists that he has told Shran the truth. Shran says that he would never betray his people, to which Saval exclaims he's trying to save them. Saval gains temporary control and tells Shran about Nirak, somebody who made a fatal mistake which led to the destruction of his village, whose name came to mean fool in the Vulcan language. He compares Shran to him, angering him, and he orders that the torture be turned up. And then Saval screams. And that was a howl.
Yeah.
That was a horrible, horrible scream he let loose there.
Yeah, very strong scene. A confrontation between those two. And Shran was really not comfortable with that.
No. I was quite disturbed by how Saval managed to rise above the torture. One moment he was in very obvious pain, very, very much discomfort. And then he just kind of settled down and started to talk normally as if he was his usual unencumbered Vulcan self. Yeah. And I thought it was really, really freaky that he was able to do that.
Yeah. I didn't notice that.
It just goes to prove we see different things when we're watching Brogan like this.
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
My observation on that scene, it is abundantly clear that Shran doesn't want to do this.
Oh, yeah.
Is what you said earlier.
Yeah.
He's hesitant. He doesn't want to do this. I think he has an admiration or respect for Saval.
That's what I was going to say, yeah. He's respecting Saval a lot.
Mm. Back on Vulcan, Archer, T'Pau and T'Pol encounter a very sudden resistance by members of the High Command, causing Archer and T'Pau to separate from T'Pol. T'Pol pretends to be a Cyrenite to convince the High Command officials to go to Mount Seleia.
Yeah.
Very quick thinking by T'Pol.
Absolutely, yes. And
she almost had me convinced.
And she said... When the guard says something like, if you deceive me or something like that, she doesn't say, I'm a Vulcan, I don't lie. She said,
I'm a Cyrenite.
I'm a Cyrenite,
yeah.
We don't lie.
So absolutely.
I was thinking, is it that she's really clever and she's, you know, trying to get out of this in the best possible way? Or is it the meld with T'Pau that's, you know, starting to maybe change her? I don't know.
I hadn't considered that at all. Because just at the beginning of that, before she reveals that she's a Cyrenite, air quotes, people,
mm-hmm.
You could see her. There was a small moment where she was thinking. She was thinking about how she was going to respond. And her outward demeanor changed. She went from being your typical lofty, almost superior Vulcan being to a fairly submissive Cyrenite.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and see, and now you've said that, I don't know. I don't know. It could have been as a result of the meld with T'Pau. Could it have been that T'Pau actually put that suggestion in her head?
No idea.
Wow. Like it. Very good.
Yeah. Did you notice also how T'Pau throws Archer into that how do you call that? Not a cave, it's a chute or something.
It's like a tunnel.
A tunnel,
like
yeah.
A tunnel of sorts,
and
yeah.
She just throws him there, and then she jumps just after him. And when they fall, there's this rock stalactites? Stalactites? How do you call it? You know,
stalactites are the ones that hang down. Yeah. Stalagmites are the ones that stand up.
Stalactites, yeah. and they break a lot of stone stalactite. And when they arrived at the bottom, their clothes are absolutely pristine.
Yeah, well, I would have expected their faces to resemble tomatoes, too. But
no.
I think T'Pau had a graze on one side.
Yeah,
and Archer, who was in front. Actually, he went down first, so he would have taken most of them out for her. Seemed fine.
Yeah.
So, yeah, really, really dodgy one, that. Did you spot the particular moment when T'Pol got punched?
Yeah.
So it was in the early part of that scene.
Yeah.
During the battle with the High Command, T'Pol got punched, and she kind of did this. She kind of turned on her feet, and almost like she fainted. Go back and have a look.
Okay,
at it. It was such a good piece of acting.
Okay,
so very much well done. And the other thing from that is, yeah, Archer with his nerve pinching.
Yeah,
he nerve pinched two guards.
Yeah, but that's the Catra. Acting for him.
Okay, here we go. So Archer was able to perform the Vulcan nerve pinch on two other Vulcans.
Mm-hmm.
And we already know that the nerve pinch works on other races as well, including humans.
Mm-hmm.
In the search for Spock, when McCoy was in possession of Spock's Catra. There was a place where he was being held before Kirk came in and broke him out. It wasn't. It was the Federation security in the bar. He tried to nerve pinch the security guard.
Yeah.
And it didn't work. But maybe there's a difference there between whether it was Surak that did the power bit to do the nerve pinch, and that the nerve pinch on its own by a human doesn't actually work.
Maybe. Maybe.
Anyway, moving on, we're now in Act 3. While the officials continue onwards, T'Pol is sent to the High Command. Talok is one of them, and he reminds her that he used to work under her and asks why she betrayed them. She doesn't respond, but denies that Cyrenites are responsible for the embassy bombing. Shran gets a communication from higher up for an update on the interrogation. We're back on the Andorian ship at this point. He waves it off, and Saval starts laughing, thinking himself a fool for thinking that Shran would have believed him. Shran threatens to raise the pain setting even more, which would cause permanent damage, but Saval retorts that Shran is concerned for him, and that perhaps he should keep that information to himself. Just then, the Enterprise fires on Shran's ship, and Shran finally relents, accepting Saval's information as true, and returning him to the Enterprise. The torture leaves Saval in a coma in Enterprise's sickbay, where Shran visits him to examine his condition. He reveals that the Imperial Guard is redeploying their forces to Regulus and believes it would be helpful, in quotes, if Enterprise joined them.
Yeah. It was he was really sorry for what he did for to Soval in this scene, I thought. And then he gave the information to Trip, and then when he asked if Enterprise could join them, it was like almost, you know, like when a child is doing something that he shouldn't, and then asks for forgiveness or something like that. He was really not very proud of what he did and trying to make up for it.
No, I'm wondering if I've missed something now, because has Saval and Shran interacted before?
I don't think so, but
I can't think of it.
Not with
that, doesn't mean it doesn't.
Not that we know of.
Mm. Yeah.
But yeah, really, really like a child asking for forgiveness almost.
I thought Tucker was going to punch him at one point, which he would have been justified in doing so, I think.
Yes, absolutely.
So back on Vulcan, on their way to Mount Saleya, Archer and T'Pau track down their attackers. They're heading away from the capital, and T'Pol is with them. Archer decides to rescue her, despite T'Pau's concern for the Kirshara. They find a group and lead them towards the Gallicite deposits, taking two of them out. The Gallicite, that is, not Archer and T'Pau. Talok remains, and Archer learns that T'Pol is already at the High Command. Archer then performs one more Vulcan nerve pinch on Talok, which T'Pau seemed really impressed.
Yes,
by yeah. that, because the way she looked at him and said, "You're improving."
Yeah, your technique is improving. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. But it was almost admiration on a look on her face.
Yeah,
that he'd managed to do that.
I agree.
T'Pol is led into the High Command Council chamber, and she's being goaded by Valas about the death penalty for treason. Enterprise and the Andorian fleet mobilise outside of the Andorian system and encounter the Vulcan attack fleet. Unfortunately, the rest of the Andorian fleet won't get there in time. The Enterprise is on its own.
Dun, dun, dun! In this scene with T'Pol and Valas, he looked like a cat playing with a mouse before, you know, having his lunch. It was obvious that it was gonna put T'Pol on trial, and it was like he already had the sentence. I mean, he was smiling. It was like he had won or something.
Yeah, exactly. He thought he had absolutely everything wrapped up. There was nothing that was going to stop him. And yeah, I'm trying to think. Is that psychopathic tendencies or sociopathic tendencies? I'm not sure which one it is, but it's. Well, I've obviously watched too many Prime Detective series, but yeah, you're absolutely right. He believes at this point that the victory is his.
Yeah,
and at this moment, really, we've got no reason to think otherwise. Right, so we're in Act 4, the final act of the episode, the final act of the arc, you could say. Archer and T'Pau reach the outskirts of the city. They need to find a discreet way in, and Archer knows somebody who can provide access codes for the transport inside. At this point, I don't know who that is.
Nope.
Meanwhile, in the council chamber, Minister Kuvak continues to dislike the situation as he acknowledges to Vlas that the Andorian fleet is equipped only with particle weapons and there is no evidence of Zindi technology. They should call off the attack. Vlas says that their forces are committed and they must destroy Andoria.
Yeah.
Very, very singular, very focused approach now from Vlas.
Yeah.
Commander Tucker orders Enterprise to move between the two fleets, the Vulcan and Andorian fleets, and Tucker hails the Vulcan fleet to buy some time, since the Vulcans outnumber the Andorians 2-1. Vlas receives the hail and orders them to leave, but Tucker is insistent and says he has already talked to Admiral Gardner, making him aware of the situation so that if anything happens to them, they'll know where to go. Vlas ends the call and orders the fleet to engage. Kuvak has had enough and wants to call off the attack. Vlas has one of the guards on attention and promises Kuvak that he'll be arrested if he tries to interfere again.
Yes, did you notice that when Vlas received the hail and he hears that it's Tucker, his eyes are goes, you know, he raises his eyes and he's like, oh no, not this guy.
Yeah.
He's beginning to be fed up by the constant annoyance.
Yeah, it was kind of like a Commander Tucker.
Yeah, not you again.
Yeah. So at this point, I think it is fair to say that Vlas has lost the plot.
Mm-hmm.
He is unable to control his emotions. He's almost become a non-Vulcan. He's not thinking logically. He's not thinking rationally. He's not thinking with control of his emotions and his outbursts. He's not the person that we first met 2 and a bit episodes ago.
Yes. And it's not the same person, but we've seen this gradually. We've seen him gradually change. So it's now the logical follow-up on what everything we've seen so far. I mean, he's losing control. Now he thought he had control when he got Tipol, but now he realizes that the Federation is involved, that nothing goes according to his plan. So, I mean, it was supposed to destroy Andoria without any resistance, and then there's a few Andorian spaceships between the fleet and Andoria, so that's not going as he wanted. The Enterprise is there, that's also not what he wanted. So yeah, he's losing on every front.
Now, obviously, you know, and we're quite close to the end of this storyline now. We don't know if we're watching this as live, we don't know what's going to happen next.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's fair to say that the way it's gone with Vlas so far was fairly predictable.
Yeah.
In that we knew quite early on that Vlas had an agenda. He was up to something. We didn't know what it was. But the fact that he is now at the situation where he's essentially gone mad.
Yeah. That's a
it was a predictable outcome.
Yes.
Anyway, let's get this this review finished. So the Enterprise is caught up in the crossfire between the Andorians and the Vulcan vessels. Eventually, when the Enterprise fires on a Vaklas type cruiser to aid a wounded Andorian ship, the Vulcans are ordered to destroy them by Vlas. During the firefight, the Kumari takes a hit for Enterprise, causing Shran to inform Tucker that Archer now owes him 2 favours.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a brilliant, brilliant scene. It was good to include that as part of it.
Yeah.
Back on Vulcan, Archer and T'Pau enter the High Command Chamber. I love the way they did this, by the way. They kind of went in all cowled and then suddenly just revealed themselves. Vlas attempts to contact security, allowing Kuvak to quickly nerve-pinch the sub-lieutenant guarding him and grabbing his weapons, stopping him from contacting the security guards. Archer reveals to the Council that Vlas bombed the Earth Embassy as part of his plan to round up the Cyrenites so that they wouldn't find the Kearsarra. Despite Vlas' insistence that the Kearsarra is a myth, Archer activates it, showing the holographic teachings of Surak. Kuvak says they must study the artifact, and T'Pau reinforces the fact that quantum dating will prove to the assembled council that it was from Surak's time, Vlas angrily exclaims that it is all lies and tries to destroy the Kirshara, only to be stunned by Kuvak, who then contacts the assault fleet to call off the attack.
Yeah, I have a few remarks on this scene. When Archer and Tipo enter the chamber, they call for the security. Now, if I was in this chamber trying to plan a bombing of some planet, I would have security out in the corridor, and obviously they didn't because Archer and Tipo just walked.
They just walked in.
Yeah. So, and also, if Kuvak was able to nerf pinch the guard and take his weapon, why didn't he do that when he was first stopped by Vlas? Why did he?
Surely he would have doubled up as a security guard himself.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, and it's just two little things, but
plot holes again.
Mm-hmm.
I did notice that T'Pau. I think T'Pau was goading Vlas.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And I love the way that she kept her cool throughout the entire scene, whereas Vlas was losing his cool more and more as the scene progressed.
She knew she had won.
Oh, absolutely. But he didn't.
Yeah.
Because he was blind to that fact.
Mm-hmm.
So, I love this scene. Back aboard Enterprise, Kos goes to see T'Pol. It was his access codes that allowed Archer and T'Pau to transport into the Vulcan High Command. He also releases T'Pol from her marriage, as he recognises that she only did it to save her mother, and that now she's gone, there seemed little point in continuing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was crying at the end of
She the- was.
Yeah. And he was very emotional too.
I think they were crying for different. I can't tell with T'Pol whether she was happy, whether she was sad, whether she was regretful. His tears were definitely regret.
She was
that.
Yeah, I think she was. She had mixed feelings. I mean, she was definitely happy to not be engaged anymore, but also I'm pretty sure maybe she started liking him maybe because he essentially saved her life and
exactly.
Archer's life.
Exactly. For what he just did in order to protect them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's not nothing.
No.
Back at the Vulcan High Command, a Vulcan priest removes Surax Kartra from Archer. We don't know the name of the Vulcan priest. I did look it up. Didn't seem to have one.
Well,
he did have a line, though, so he would have got paid for it. Saval informs him that the High Command will now be disbanded, and T'Pau says that it's time for Earth to stand on its own.
Archer replied that we are ready.
Yes.
Exactly what he said in the pilot when they started and then everything went wrong.
Yeah, yeah. We're not... Yeah, you can just imagine it, can't you? He'll look at T'Pau and say, "We're ready."
We're not ready.
And then the final scene.
Yeah.
In a cave somewhere, Vlas meets clandestinely, there's a word, with Talok, who is actually a Romulan. Dun, dun, dun.
Yay.
Vlas is angry that they didn't kill Archer, but the Romulan tells him to wait, that forcibly freeing him will cause his disappearance to be noticed. He says that the reunification is only a matter of time.
Yeah, I didn't see this one coming.
No, not at all. Your response when you first watched that episode last week.
Yeah.
I can't remember the exact words you used, but it was something along the lines of, "Holy cow, I've just seen the end of the episode." Yeah, I didn't see that coming at all. I mean, you often get characters in episodes that seem to have no particular purpose. They're just there to fill out the story. And I thought perhaps that Talok was one of them. Why would they have given him a name when we only see him in like two or three scenes? Mm-hmm. That's what's happened in the past. But now we know, because he's actually probably one of the most important characters in the entire arc.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there's actually two reasons why characters that we don't know have a name. One, it's because maybe they're going to become very important in the following episodes. Two, it's because they're going to die.
Yeah. Yes, and we need to know the name of the people so that we can remember. Yeah. Yeah. Remember them. Yes.
I remember that many, many times I said when I watched the series, and suddenly, you know, they stop and talk to some random person here, and they, oh, are you Bob? And I was like, okay, sorry, Bob. And nine times out of ten, Bob dies.
Brilliant.
Yeah. So, yeah, great episode. It was... I mean, we didn't spot any mistakes as we might have on previous episodes. The special effects were okay. I mean, there was nothing very, really out of the ordinary, but everything was okay. The story itself was great. I mean, there was some plot holes as we noticed, but. All in all, very, very good episode.
Yeah, totally agree. I think it was a really good end to the storyline. The acting was brilliant. Special effects, I was a little bit disappointed by the Galasite electrical storm thing. It seemed a little bit weak to me. I would have expected more sort of bangs and explosions than just like, you know, fizzles. but overall, yeah. I wasn't disappointed by it. And the fact that even though it's a story arc that's ended, it's kind of kicked off something else.
Yeah.
Which I think we revisit in the next arc, which starts next week. I could be wrong. I'm sure I read somewhere that the next set of three kind of follows on from what we saw at the end of that episode.
Okay. That would be great.
So, excellent. So, well, that ends our review. Right, so a couple of episodes ago, we put a call out to you, the lovely listeners, to tell us your Because of Star Trek stories. I don't think we've had any responses to that as yet, have we?
Not yet, no.
Not yet. So, what we'd like you to do is we would like you to tell us of your Because of Star Trek story. So, because of Star Trek, I am a Vulcan Kolinar master. Because of Star Trek, I haven't fallen off any ladders. I don't know. Just make them up yourself. But, seriously, if you have had any life experiences that have been a direct result of Star Trek, either from what you've watched or from picking up the styles of certain characters, like it was Ryan who was inspired by Captain Kirk, and because of Kirk and the way that he acted as a captain, it kind of guided his career going forwards, that kind of story. If you've got any of those, then please do drop us a note. We'll give you all the details at the end of the show.
Absolutely. It could be anything, really. Maybe you met someone, maybe you won an award or something. Really, we're interested in everything. So send us your Because of Star Trek story. And
Of Star Trek, we're doing a podcast.
Yes.
There's the first one.
Yeah, there you go.
So, probably doesn't count, but...
You know, it's like those things where you're not allowed to participate because you're in the production team.
Yes.
And with that, it's time for our roundup of the news for the past couple of weeks. So in the news for this episode. The trailer for season 3 of Star Trek Discovery has been released at the New York Comic Con earlier this month. Star Trek Discovery is warping far into the future in its third season. The trailer released at the New York Comic Con suggested a future where the Federation isn't what it once was. During the Star Trek Discovery panel at Palifest on Saturday, which was probably last Saturday, co-showrunner Michel Paradise confirmed that the United Federation of Planets does still exist in the 32nd century, but that it is challenged. Paradise did not go into detail about what is challenging the Federation, such as revealing whether it's internal struggles or a direct threat from an outside force. Fans will have to wait until the new season begins for those answers. And yeah, we've seen the trailer. I've sent you the link earlier.
Yes.
It doesn't reveal a lot, but it makes us wonder what the hell is going on, because there are some references, some dialogue that are really raising questions.
Well, as we don't yet know when the third season is going to be screening, it gives them a lot of opportunities to throw, you know, another 3 or 4 trailers at us, giving a little bit more information each time, like they're doing with Picard, to be fair. I think if I had one question that I want answered, hopefully before season 3 airs, it is, how are people going to react to the fact that a 1,000-year-old starship has just turned up in their, in their time?
Yes, even though it has the spot drive, but so it's really advanced for its own time. But yeah, it's like 900 years. No, how far did they jump?
931 ahead for some reason.
Something like
3186 is the year they jump forward to.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, how are they going to react? Will the spaceship still be there? Probably, as we see it in the trailer, I think. So it's gonna be interesting to have Picard that happens in the 25th century, and then Discovery in the 32nd century.
I think Picard starts in 2399.
So
it's right at the end of the 24th century.
Yeah. So that's going to be interesting. Maybe you know, they could. I don't know if there's a creative collaboration between the two series, but maybe some things that happen in Picard can have an echo on Discovery. I don't know. That could be fun.
Definitely.
Okay, so next in the news this week, Star Trek producer teases possibility of more 23rd century stories. Star Trek Discovery is making the jump to the 32nd century in its third season, but that doesn't mean that Star Trek is leaving the 23rd century behind. During the Star Trek Universe panel at New York Comic Con, Discovery co-showrunner and Star Trek franchise producer Alex Kurtzman said there are no plans for Discovery to return to its original setting, but that doesn't mean other Star Trek series won't take place during that era. When asked if Discovery would ever return, Kurtzman said that there are no such plans. But he said, I quote, "I think that obviously there's many shows that are in the works now, and they will be in different timelines, so anything is possible. We take canon very, very seriously and are not looking to negate anything that happened and the amazing work of many writers over the last 50 years." So that's
Although
very good news.
It is good news, but there are people who think that the canon has been slightly spoiled by Discovery anyway. The fact that nobody in the original series onwards has ever mentioned Discovery. And I know there was the whole thing about they'd agreed they would never mention it again. Pike said that they would never mention it again. But I don't know.
I mean, from the whole crew and from everyone involved with Discovery, only Spock is in the original series.
Only Spock is in the original series. I mean, Pike's in the pilot, obviously.
Yeah, but Pike is a captain. So if someone can, you know, hold his mouth, maybe he can. He's one of the people who said that this never happened. So
yes,
everybody else is either dead or in the 32nd century.
It is a very good question. I think we'd probably need to do a bit of digging into the characters that were aboard the Pike 1701 and see what happened to their characters. Because, yeah, if at the point that the original series started properly with Kirk, that the only person still alive, for want of a better phrase, is Spock, then, yeah, it's kind of done.
Yeah. So that's what I was thinking about that earlier today. And I might be wrong. I might have missed some, but I believe that there's not a lot of people from Discovery that transfer to the original series. Oh, well, not transfer to, but you know what I mean.
Yes.
So next in this series of news, still about Star Trek Discovery. Star Trek Discovery is headed to television in the UK. CBS Studios International and Channel 4 today announced a new content licensing agreement for the linear television premiere of Star Trek Discovery in the United Kingdom. Netflix will maintain the right to debut new episodes of Star Trek Discovery, while Channel 4 will begin airing the shows with its first season. Now, I don't know what a linear television premiere is, but
I think it means as opposed to streaming.
Okay.
So streaming is what we would call on demand. Mm-hmm. So you go and get it when you want to get it. But with Channel 4 is one of our original terrestrial channels. We only had 5 terrestrial channels in this country. And it was just a box standard broadcast channel. So things are on when they broadcast them.
Okay.
So yeah,
I wonder if that's a sign that Netflix, you know, doesn't care a lot about Discovery anymore.
Because no, that's not what it means.
Okay.
I read somewhere, I think it was actually in the link you sent me with the Discovery Season 3 trailer on it, that Netflix will continue with Discovery, so Season 3 will still be on Netflix. But it actually is fairly common practice in this country, once something has been on a, for want of a better phrase, restrictive platform, so not a free-to-air platform like, I don't know, Netflix, Sky Atlantic, any of those ones.
Okay.
What you'll find is that there will be a channel in this country that will purchase the rights to broadcast. They'll classify it as a network premiere because it would never have been on terrestrial television before. In fact, it would never have been on cable television before in this country. And they will reshow them for the masses. So that the non-exclusive showing, if you like.
That's great. That's more,
so
more
it, people. It is common.
More people exposed to Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah. It's like with Mr. Robot. Mr. Robot is an Amazon Prime. Excuse me. An Amazon Prime show. But we watched it on... Oh, I can't remember what some... Was it far? Oh, I can't remember which channel it was on, but it was broadcast on free-to-air over here as well, about a year behind.
That's nice. So finally, in the news this week, Star Trek Picard producer says Season 2 is already in the works. Yay! Star Trek Picard is already preparing for a return trip on CBS All Access. During an interview with TrekCore at the New York Comic Con, Star Trek Picard executive producer Alex Kurtzman, very prolific, this man, he confirmed that he's already working on the show's second season. Definitely, Kurtzman said on his plan for the show's future, already in the works. So all the links to those news will be in our show notes.
I'm going to be honest here. I do not care about Season 2. until we get season one.
Yes, that's true. But season one is so small. I mean, it's just 10 episodes. We do need it more than that. So it's good that they're planning for season two.
It is good. It is good. And if it's going to be a full season as well, not just a 10 episode one, then I suppose it'll depend on how well season one of Picard is received by the viewers. I don't think there's going to be an issue, if I'm honest.
To be honest, I would prefer a 10 episode season that is really well written and well produced, rather than a 24 episode season that has 12 of them that are just average.
I'm going to go with that. I agree with you. I agree with you. I think if you get a really good a good season, it doesn't matter if it's like 6 episodes.
Yeah. I mean, look at Doctor Who. They are very short season each time, and so far I've in the new series the last 3-4 series of Doctor Who, I haven't been disappointed.
There you go.
And if Picard is anything like season 4 of Enterprise so far, then I'm all in.
Yep. Yes,
definitely. And that concludes our news roundup for this episode. Well, thanks to everyone who downloaded our show. Our podcast can be found on Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and everywhere good podcasts are. If you are so inclined, please leave us a nice review in your podcast app. That doesn't help a bit with the ranking, but that sure will make us happy.
Also,
help us spread the word about our existence by painting the name of the show on the door of your car. That will help a lot, and make sure to send us a photograph if you do that. This review uses material from Kirshara article on the Memory Alpha Wiki at Fandom and is licensed under the Creative Commons by Attribution non-commercial license, which means you can almost do whatever you want with it, except you cannot make you cannot use that for your business.
Right, so you can find all of our episodes and details of how to get in contact with us over at our website, which is earlgreyhot.org. Don't forget, you can also leave us a comment on the bottom of the show notes for whichever episode it is you happen to be watching or listening to, whichever, I don't know.
I'm watching and not we'll, yet.
Well, you don't need to be watching this, I'll tell you that for nothing. All you can see is just me drinking beer the entire episode. We also now have a dedicated page on the site for our rapid fire questions, our quick fire round that we do to our guests. So if you are interested in seeing all the answers that we have been given so far to the questions we are asking our guests, then you can find all those over at teearlgreyhot.org/answers.
And that reminds me that I have to update this page with Rose answers from last week. Yeah. You can also send us an email at feedback@teearlgreyhot.org. We read absolutely everything. And if there's something that we plan on reading on the show, we will do that unless you tell us not to do that.
You can find us on the social networks. We're on Twitter and Facebook. Our username there is TEGHpodcast. And we're also on Telegram if you want to come and talk to us during the week. We have a good number of people in there at the moment. Come and talk to us. Our address there is t.me/TEGHpodcast.
And we're also on Mastodon, on the mastodon.social instance. And our address there is also TEGHpodcast.
Unless otherwise stated, this episode is released under a Creative Commons by Attribution Share Alike license, which means you can do pretty much whatever you want to do with it, as long as you credit us as the original authors. And if you do publish something based on this episode, you need to release it under the same license.
And of course, this podcast is part of the Other Side Podcast Network. Find out more about our show over at otherside.network. And that concludes this episode 9 of Tea Earl Grey Hot. Well, thank you, Dave, for joining me once again tonight.
Been a pleasure.
Our next episode will be a review of Enterprise Season 4, Episode 10, Deidalus, and we will be joined by another guest. We know, Dave and I know who that guest is going to be, but you will have to wait until next week.
Indeed.
And well, since we're done with this episode, we're going to catch you next week for episode 10. In the meantime, take care of yourselves. Ciao, ciao.
See ya.
You've been listening to a member of the Other Side Podcast Network. Find out more about our shows at otherside.network.